Chaidwaita Chandragaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Today is Saturday, May 14th, 2016. Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 9, entitled Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Travels to the Holy Places, Text 311 through 318. Danus tirta deki karila nirvindyate snane. Drishyamukha giri aila dandakaranye. The Lord next arrived to Danus tirta, where he took his bath in the river Nirvindya. He then arrived at Rishyamukha mountain and then went to Dandakaranya. Purport. According to some opinions, Rishyamukha is a chain of mountains beginning at the village of Hampi Grama in the district of Bellary. The mountain chain begins along the bank of the river Tungabhadra, which gradually reaches the state of Hyderabad. According to other opinions, this hill is situated in Madhya Pradesh and bears the present name of Rampa. Dandakaranya is a spacious tract of land which begins north of Khandesha and extends up to the southern Amada Nagara through Nasika and Aurangabad. The Gandharvi River flows through this tract of land, and there is a great forest there where Lord Ramachandra lived. Text 312. Saptatala riksha deke kana bittara. Ati vridha ati stula ati uchatara. Within the Dandakaranya forest, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then visited a place called Saptatala. The seven palm trees there were very old, very bulky, and very high. Purport. The name Saptatala is mentioned in Kishkindya, the Kishkindya section of the Ramayana, and is described in the 11th and 12th chapters of that section. Verse 313. Saptatala deki prabhu alingana kaila. Sasariye saptatala vaikunta chalila. Upon seeing the seven palm trees, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced them. As a result, they all returned to Vaikuntha Loka, the spiritual world. Text 314. Sunya stala deki lokera haila chamatkara. Loki kahi e sanyasi rama avatara. After the seven palm trees had departed for Vaikuntha, everyone was astonished to see that they were gone. The people then began to say, the sannyasi called Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must be an incarnation of Lord Ramachandra. Text 315. Sasariye tala gela Sri Vaikuntha Dhamma. Aiche saki karahaya vina eka rama. Only Lord Ramachandra has the power to send seven palm trees to the spiritual Vaikuntha planets. Text 316. Text 3:16. Prabhu Asi Kaila Pampa Sarovare Snana. Panchavati Asi Tahan Karila Visrama. Eventually, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived at a lake known as Pampa, where he took his bath. He then went to a place called Panchavati, where he rested. Purport. According to some, the old name of the Tungabhadra River was Pampa. According to others, Vijayanagara, the capital of the state, was known as Pampartirtha. According to still others, the lake near Anagundi, in the direction of Hyderabad, is Pampa Sarovara. The river Tungabhadra also flows through there. There are many different opinions about the lake called Pampa Sarovara. Text 3:17. Nasike Tyambaka Deki Gela Brahmagiri. Kushavarte Aila Yahan Janmila Gandharvi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then visited Nasika, where he saw the deity of Triambaka, Lord Shiva. He then went to Brahmagiri and then to Kushavarta, the source of the river Gandharvari. Purport. Kushavarta is located in the western Ghat at Sayadri. It is near Nasika, a holy place, but according to some, it is situated in the valley of Vindhya. In text 3:18, Saptagandavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Punarapi Aila Prabhu Vidyanagara. Saptagandavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Narapi Aila Prabhu Vidyanagara. Saptagandavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Punarapi Aila Prabhu Vidyanagara. Ladies. Sapta Gandhavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Punarapi Aila Prabhu Vindanagara. Sapta Gandhavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Punarapi Aila Prabhu Vindanagara. Sapta Gandhavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Sapta Gandhavari Aila Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Saptagandavari. The place known as Saptagandavari. Aila. King. Kari. I'm sorry. Kari Tirtha Bahutara. Visiting various holy places. Punarapi, again, Aila, came back. Prabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vidyanagara, the place where he met Ramachandra Roy, Ramananda Roy. Text, after visiting many other holy places, the Lord went to Sapta Godavari. At last he returned to Vidyanagara. Let's read it together. After visiting many other holy places, the Lord went to Sapta Godavari. At last, he returned to Vidyanagara. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled from the source of the Godavari River and eventually visited the northern side of Hyderabad state. He finally arrived at the state of Kailinga. Om Jnana Tamandasya Ganandana Shaka Chakshwamitam Yane Tasmai Shri Guru Namaha Spoiling the Darkness of Ignorance and Spiritual Master Open My Eyes with the Torch of Knowledge and offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. After visiting many other holy places, the Lord went to Sapta Godavari. At last, He returned to Vidyanagara. So today is the auspicious appearance day of Sita Devi and Janava Mata, and the disappearance day of Madhu Pandit. And I thought that since Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is traveling to the holy places, and some of the places that he visited were the places where Lord Ramachandra and Sita Devi had pastimes, that it's quite appropriate that actually we can discuss these divine personalities, Janava Mata and Sita Devi. I just did also want to mention Madhu Pandit. Madhu Pandit Goswami. Brajanabha, Lord Krishna's great-grandson, installed the original Gopinath deity in Vrindavan over 5,000 years ago. About 500 years ago, Paramananda Bhattacharya discovered the deity in the earth at Vangshivata on the banks of the Yamuna. Madhu Pandit Goswami, a disciple of Sri Gadadhar Pandit, worshipped the Gopinath deity. Bhakti Ratnakar says that Sri Gopinath Ji, who is an ocean of mercy, forever sports along the enchanting banks of the Yamuna at Vangshivata. His bodily luster steals the mind of whoever sees him. When the soothing sweetness of Gopinath Ji's charming form enters the heart, it immediately extinguishes the burning fire of material existence. Now the original Gopinath deity stays in Jaipur, Rajasthan. Madhu Pandit Goswami blessed Srinivasacharya with Gopinath's garlands before Srinivas, Narottam, and Shyamananda took the bullock cart of Goswami Granthas from Vrindavan. In Golok Vrindavan, Madhu Pandit Goswami serves as Mandali Shaki in the group of Champakalata Sakhi. The Samadhi of Madhu Pandit Goswami is on the right side of the entrance within the compound of Radha Gopinath Temple in Vrindavan. So, I could really appreciate being able to learn more about the pastimes of these two exalted Vaishnavis, Janava Mata and then Sita Devi, who is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Srila Prabhupada, in one of his purports to in Srimad Bhagavatam, I remember when I was first studying Srimad Bhagavatam and reading through the first canto at Krishna House and coming upon this purport, I never forgot it, actually, because of what he says. And I it's at a point in Bhagavatam where Bhishma Dev is lying on the bed of arrows, and Yudhisthira asks him to give the essentials of various religious duties, the essential principles. And so Bhishma Dev is lying there in front of all the great sages and Krishna, and he says, by divisions, acts of charity, the pragmatic activities of a king, and activities for salvation. Then he describes the duties of women and devotees, both briefly and extensively. And in the purport, Prabhupada goes through each one systematically, and when he gets to the point about describing the duties of women and devotees, He says that women are more powerful than men because women are accepted as an inspiration for men. He says that they are controlled by shyness, and that, and then he gives an example of really powerful men who are controlled by the inspiration of women. Cleopatra controlling Julius Caesar. And he says when this shyness is very important for women because when it's not controlled, he compares it to a valve that's opened. And I just imagine like a dam being opened. And he says when this valve is opened, it gives rise to adultery and unwanted children, which creates havoc in the world, and which is the havoc we're experiencing now. When I was quite young, one of my earliest memories is spending time with my parents' friends. They were a tight group of four couples, one of which was my parents. And there was such a tight group that as I grew up, I would call them aunt and uncle, their friends. And their children would be like my cousins. And there was this one particular instance where I remember we were at one of my parents' friends' homes. And I was quite young, and I only have sort of imagery of what happened, but I remember that there was some argument, and that one of the men in the group, he just left abruptly. And then I remember when he drove off, there was a screeching of tires. And at the time, I didn't really think anything of it, but later, as I got older, I started to learn about what happened, that one of the men in the couple was having an affair with one of the women in one of the other couples. And all of the couples in my parents' close group of friends became divorced at least one time, and most of them became divorced many times. And my parents were the only ones in that group who stayed together for now it's been about 50, I think they've been together for about 50 years. And one of the things I'm really grateful for to Krishna is that I have this stability in my family that's created by the love of my parents for each other. And I can see how that's becoming more and more rare. I asked my parents one time about when they were children, like, why did you get married? Why did you have children? And my father's response was that that's just what we did. And that in the 50s, when my parents were born, you know, it was not a commonplace to become divorced. Whereas nowadays is a 50% divorce rate. And this creates a very difficult atmosphere for people to practice Krishna consciousness. And I can only see it from my perspective that I'm really grateful that I had that stability in my life growing up. And so Prabhupada alludes to the fact that in that purport, that shyness is a quality that actually is not seen as something that could be unwanted, but it's a desirable quality. And it's so desirable that women who cultivate this quality of shyness actually become more powerful than men. Which is kind of the opposite of what you see. Men leading nations, you know, men leading athletics, men at the top of intellectual institutions and in businesses. This is not what you see, that women are more powerful. But Prabhupada is saying that women are more powerful than men. And so we have these examples. Sita Devi. Sita Devi is described as the ideal wife and Lord Ramachandra the ideal husband. This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 10, Verse 55. Mother Sita was very submissive, faithful, shy, chaste, always understanding the attitude of her husband. Thus, by her character and her love and service, she completely attracted the mind of the Lord. And in the purport, Prabhupada, he makes reference to text 321 in reference to Sita Devi. Whatever example a great man sets, common people follow. The verse is about Sita Devi, and he's using this verse, which is in the masculine, that whatever example a great man sets, common people follow. If the kings, the leaders, and the brahmanas, the teachers, would set forth the examples we receive from Vedic literature, the entire world would be heaven. Indeed, there would no longer be hellish conditions within the material world. So this example set by Sita Devi of submissiveness, shyness, faithfulness, chastity, and attitude of service is actually quite an important balancing factor as far as how our society advances spiritually. To make spiritual advancement, there needs to be some balance in our material lives. It's very difficult to practice spiritual life when you're coming from a broken family, when there's war and pestilence, and also when there are other material things that are sort of pulling us away from our sadhana, from being able to practice and agitating the mind even further. So chastity, being faithful to one's partner. Submissiveness can also see. So these days, chastity is seen as really not a quality for people to cultivate. Chastity before marriage is unknown in the material world, and chastity within marriage is only known about less than half the time. So it's not seen. It may be seen as important to in discussions, but practically it's not something that we experience very often in the material world. Submissiveness can have a negative connotation, but it's not really submissiveness. It's basically being taken advantage of or being abused. Because to be submissive, one has to follow the instructions of authority who is of exemplary character, like Lord Ramachandra. The idea of submissiveness is to not follow the instructions and example of someone who's not of exemplary character. That would constitute abuse. And so Lord Ramachandra, being the ideal husband, created a perfect situation for Sita Devi to be completely submissive to him. Shyness. So shyness, again, can be seen with a positive or negative connotation. Shyness may be someone who doesn't speak, can't speak up for themselves, can't stand up for themselves. Or maybe not because they don't want to, but just because they're not intellectual to say very much, and can just be seen as a second-class person, someone who's shy, just kind of off in the corner in the shadows. But Prabhupada said that this shyness is very important for women, and it creates balance in society, and it controls great men. For someone to be properly shy, they have to have some respect for themselves and respect for others. And through this respect, they show paucity of speech and paucity of behavior and paucity of demeanor. Attitude of service and then faithfulness. Faithfulness meaning being loyal in all aspects of a relationship. So Sita Devi, her life was an example of all these qualities. When she was captured and incarcerated by Ravana, she spent quite some time, I believe it was a year or more, and she was tormented by Rakshasas. And that entire time she spent meditating on Lord Ram. And she tolerated this torment. And not only that, she grew stronger by meditating on Lord Ramachandra. And when Hanuman came to rescue Sita Devi, she wouldn't go with him because she didn't want to be with another man. She knew that Lord Ram would come and rescue her. So these are examples of perfect shyness, perfect submission, perfect submissiveness, perfect faithfulness, an attitude of service. And Janava Mata is described as the ideal spiritual leader and also as an ideal guru. She was one of two female consorts of Lord Nityananda, and they were sisters. Visuddha was her sister, and Visuddha had two children, Virabhadra and Ramachandra. And Visuddha left her body before Janavamata, and Janavamata gave diksha to her two children, Virabhadra and Ramachandra. In Krishna Leela, Janavamata is Revati and Visuddha is Varuni. Subsequently, also, Janavamata gave diksha to Yadunanda Acharya's wife, Lakshmi's two daughters, Srimati and Narayani. She became a very prominent teacher in the Sankirtan movement and very prominent leader, so much so that she was coordinating and organizing Harinam Sankirtan with Srinivas Acharya and Narottam Das Thakur. So she was a prominent leader of all the Vaishnavas. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, Chapter 8, Text 128, whether one is a Brahmin, a sannyasi, or a Sudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. In that purport, Srila Prabhupada says, actually, the Brahmin is supposed to be the spiritual master of all other varnas or classes. But as far as Krishna consciousness is concerned, everyone is capable of becoming a spiritual master because knowledge in Krishna consciousness is on the platform of the spirit soul. To spread Krishna consciousness, one need only be cognizant of the science of the spirit soul. It does not matter whether one is Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, Sannyasi, Grihastha, or whatever. If one simply understands the science, he can become a spiritual master. If one understands the truth of Krishna consciousness and seriously desires to attain transcendental knowledge for the perfection of life, he can accept a spiritual master from any social status, provided the spiritual master is fully conversant with the science of Krishna. Factually, the qualifications of a spiritual master depend on his knowledge of the science of Krishna. The word guru is equally applicable to the Vartma Pradarshika Guru, Shiksha Guru, and Diksha Guru. Unless we accept the principle enunciated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this Krishna consciousness movement cannot spread all over the world. So Srila Prabhupada is asking us to see that the qualifications of someone who is a leader is spiritual. And Janavamata is a perfect example of that. In order to develop those leadership qualities, A person needs to be given the opportunity to develop them. And if the Sankirtan movement is to spread, we also need to be able to recognize who are leaders and who are qualified to be gurus, shiksha gurus, diksha gurus, like Srila Prabhupada said. It may be more difficult for women because of social reasons to be in this leadership position. But Prabhupada never uses that social status to preclude them from being leaders like Janavamata. And he actually even says that all of his sons and daughters, he wants them to inherit the title of Bhaktivedanta, and that anyone with the title Bhaktivedanta can initiate disciples all over the world. So how does one become qualified? How does one gain the qualification necessary to give instruction in Krishna consciousness? This is in Madhya Leela, chapter 7, text 128. Yare deka tari kaha Krishna upadesha Amara agaya guru hana tara edesha. Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. So it's by the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and following the parampara system that one gains the qualification to spread Krishna consciousness. And this is a requirement for the Harinam Sankirtan movement to continue to spread. I mean, we may optimistically think that, you know, Srila Prabhupada has spread this movement all over the world and that it's already all over the world. What more do we have to do? But really, every town and village, every home, every people everywhere should be aware of the Sankirtan movement and have the opportunity to become Krishna conscious. And that's coming to us as an order from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but also Srila Prabhupada. By chanting Hare Krishna, we also gain the qualification to be in this position of guru, because the Hare Krishna mantra purifies our consciousness. And anyone can chant the Hare Krishna mantra, regardless of gender or any bodily designation, varna, religion, wealth. Association with devotees, reading the Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, like it said in this shloka, visiting holy places, and worshiping the deity. These are essential practices for developing one's Krishna consciousness. And trying to cultivate a society amongst ourselves or at large where people can feel that, or where people can have equal opportunity to be Krishna conscious, and whatever their qualities are, for those qualities to be recognized and to be cultivated and utilized in Krishna's service. So these are necessary for the Sankirtan movement to continue, particularly in the West, to spread. Uh, I just went on a trip to New Vrindavan through Hillsboro, Potomac, and Gita Nagari. And Gita Nagari and New Vrindavan being farm communities, two farm communities of a collection of other farm communities that were initially started that have now no longer farm communities, but there were more farm communities, and we have only a few less now, less so. And these types of communities are very important for Krishna consciousness. At the same time, it's very important to have centers in the cities where the youth can be attracted to Krishna consciousness as well. And one thing that I've seen that the youth very much appreciates is seeing devotees trying to practice a sustainable way of life. And so these farm communities are very important for that, for developing Varnashram Dharma. At the same time, it's important for the youth to see that in Krishna consciousness, there is a place for them. And when Srila Prabhupada was here, that was his mood. And he got a lot of flack for that. He got a lot of flack for putting women in positions where culturally in India would be seen as a big no-no. And Srila Prabhupada did that because he wanted to utilize everyone's capacity in Krishna's service. And he could see that in the West, women have some propensity that may be different than women in other parts of the world. And he took advantage of that for Krishna's service so that these devotees could become Krishna conscious. He just cared about everyone. And one thing that will really hinder or halt the spread of the Sankirtan movement is to develop a mood contrary to that preaching mood of Srila Prabhupada. And to not see that this is a spiritual movement, and to just see the differences, and rather than try to cultivate and amplify those qualities that people have that they can use in Krishna's service, but to negate them. Because this attitude is the attitude of the world already, of the material world. And what Srila Prabhupada gave us in his translations of Bhagavad Gita is something that's completely transcendental to that. So I'd just like to leave you with this thought. That women are more powerful than men. Because women are accepted as an inspiration for men, and I would challenge you to say that they're not also an inspiration for women. So Srila Prabhupada says that women are an inspiration for everyone. And if you could just look at your life and look to the women in your life who have been an inspiration to you, and to try to do some service for them, and try to show them your gratitude and respect. Because I feel like it's having those types of relationships with everyone that will allow our movement to spread everywhere. And having attitudes contrary to that is really something that's gonna slow down Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. So I'll end there. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. I've been away for a long time, maybe some 30 odd years. I'm trying to be with devotees again as much as I can. So there are a lot of things I don't know. You were talking about the role of the guru, and are our gurus today within ISKCON, appointed by some central body, or like the GBC, or can one become a guru simply because they're recognized by other devotees? Philosophically, in terms of our philosophy, Vaishnava philosophy, is that appropriate? What is the appropriate? So that's more or less. Not that I'm trying to start. I just want to understand because some people are talking to me and asking me questions.
Sorry. Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice question. So are gurus appointed or are they recommended? Actually, it's both. A guru needs to be recommended by 10 Vaishnavas in good status. That person in themselves needs to be in good status for at least the last 10 years. And they do have to be, the GBC does need to grant them the ability to give diksha. So it's actually both. Well, it's what we have, and the GBC, I mean, which part of it are you referring to? I don't know myself any the scriptural reference to that. But Srila Prabhupada said that ISKCON is my body and that the GBC was established by Srila Prabhupada. So the GBC is our authority. It's the management structure of ISKCON. So within that management structure, you know, we follow those recommendations. So there are specific ISKCON laws on how someone can give initiation, and so we do follow that because that was what was recommended to us by Srila Prabhupada. In the Gaudiya Math, after Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left, he also wanted to establish a structure, management structure like the GBC. But what ended up happening was that two of his disciples polarized the Gaudiya Math into, you know, I am the next Acharya. And so the Gaudiya Math was not able to fulfill the mission of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which was to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So Srila Prabhupada established the GBC so that our movement at ISKCON could continue. And so there are various recommendations, and the GBC is composed of many exalted Vaishnavas, and they do make reference to, you know, when they make these decisions, to Shastra, which is part of the entomology of this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. But there are other aspects also, which Srila Prabhupada said is also there, which we can consider as also bona fide. So within that management structure, we have these recommendations. So that's and I can see how that would be important to have a system of checks and balances where you just don't have someone appearing as, you know, the next Acharya and making and giving initiations without going through some system of checks and balances. I think that's very important. No, that's a good question. So, yeah, that's a very good point. They're very good questions. So, there's actually a course now called the Disciple Course, and it explicitly goes through and answers questions like this. So, someone who's new to Krishna consciousness is encouraged to take Prabhupada Ashraya for at least 6 months, which means to take shelter of Srila Prabhupada specifically. as the preeminent Shiksha Guru and founder Acharya of ISKCON. Once they have the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, then they can choose themselves, you know, someone who is qualified to give diksha. And that guru will be in parampara and taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada. And that guru will cultivate that person's relationship with Srila Prabhupada. But the person gets to choose, but after they take shelter of Srila Prabhupada. So, and you know, in regards to that, it's important for us who are maybe not Srila Prabhupada disciples, but disciples of his disciples, when we meet someone who's new to Krishna consciousness, to introduce them to Srila Prabhupada first. There is a quote in the Shastra where it talks about kind of hiding different things, one of them being your own guru. Because we're all connected to Srila Prabhupada through his shiksha. So when someone's new, we're actually obligated to introduce them to Srila Prabhupada and let them cultivate that relationship rather than immediately, you know, promoting one's guru or canvassing for one's guru. So all those things are there in the disciple course, so that it's very nice. And someone who's new and who's thinking about these things, asking these types of questions, that may be someone that would be interested in taking that course.
It's a required course. Yeah. I took it last year, and it was really, really helpful. These questions.
Yes, afterwards we can talk about that. Yes.
So, just a comment. Great discussion today. Thank you very much for it. I wonder if you could comment on something His Holiness H.D. Goswami has mentioned in the past, in the early days of ISKCON, which was that there was a very, very strong egalitarian feel to the movement, especially in the relations between the sexes and how they worship together side by side. And he said, I always looked at the women as my sisters, and they looked at me as their brother, and it was a communal feel. What I noticed coming to the movement just in the past 3 years, new, is that we, at least here in this community, we have a much more stratified division between the genders. And I'm wondering if you could comment on where that's coming from and what you think about that.
So the difference between the early days where men and women were like brothers and sisters, and today where there's more of a, there's, how do you describe it? You said stratified. Well, more of a demarcation.
Perhaps. I mean, the fact that we divide the temple in two, and that today you inverted the traditional approach, which is you ask the Matajis to go first, is that normally it's the men who go first for pretty much everything. I'm just wondering, you know, where that comes from and what you think about that.
A lot of these, so these are sort of social designations, and they, there's an importance to that, certainly. So a lot of it comes from tradition, and so not being, you know, like you said, I mean, I've just come to this movement in the last, 10 years, so I really only have the experience of what the mood is now amongst the Vaishnavas. But what my understanding is more recently, hearing from a more of a variety of Srila Prabhupada disciples, is that, like you said, the mood is different than it was when Srila Prabhupada was here, and that he did treat his disciples as children, and their relationship with each other was one of brothers and sisters. And he encouraged women to do things like give classes and lead kirtans, and even be in leadership responsibilities. And some of that caused backlash from his godbrothers, and some of that caused backlash from even some of his male disciples. I remember, I believe he was encouraging Mother Jamuna to be on the GBC. And at that time, I haven't read through her entire book, but she didn't end up taking that position at the time because of some of the response to that. So I think it's important for me to really understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada, not just through his books, but through his disciples and through a variety of his disciples, because sometimes how we apply Krishna consciousness is very much so affected by our own upbringing in our own lives, and how we interpret some of the things in Srila Prabhupada's books may be out of context. It may be in the context of our own upbringing, our own lives, and our own trauma. And so it's very important to really try to experience the mood of Srila Prabhupada through a variety of his disciples. That's my experience. And so some of these things are tradition, but some of these things are kind of moving more to this cultural side of India than when Srila Prabhupada was actually here. And so we may be starting to lose a little bit of Srila Prabhupada's mood for the mood of this strict Eastern, you know, these details of social structure, which I've said are important too, but to a certain degree, not in the sense that they oppress someone's spirituality and their Krishna consciousness, but just to the point that they provide, you know, some social structure for us. And Prabhupada said, he said, not many. There won't be many female gurus. Perhaps because maybe not many women have the proclivity to be a guru, but he did not preclude women from becoming gurus, and he said that it's based on qualification. And perhaps also because socially it would be more challenging to have a woman in that position, but again, it doesn't preclude that. Now, perhaps in other parts of the world, like India, that would be something that would be a little bit, again, it's different socially. But to try to impose a culture in America and say that that's Krishna consciousness is not Krishna consciousness. So my only point was to just be aware of that, because that wasn't Srila Prabhupada's mood. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for such a nice class. Quite a few points are coming into my head as the discussion is going on. One thing was, well, here in the temple itself, we have mainly women as the leaders. Mother Mukhya is our leader. Thank you, Mukhya Prabhu, for being such a good leader. Then we have our nice Sankirtan leader, Mother Sri Vrindavan. And then we have Mother Astasakhi, who is in the temple office. And we have Jai Radhe, who is, might be the treasurer, or so.
Mother Nittai Priya.
Mother Nittai Priya.
He's the head pujari.
Okay, so here, yeah, thank you. So we have our temple is an example. As far as Prabhu's question about the division, one thing that came to my mind was it's a razor's edge. You started off telling in your own in your class about your parents and their friends. So they were so close, like almost like brothers and sisters, like you said that you call them uncle and aunts. So they were so close, and then a mishap happening. So it's something that has to be done very, very, it's something very, it's something that we have to be very careful about. Although divisions, physical divisions, don't really necessarily solve the problem. It is something what you were talking in your class about, the word shyness for women. And that word shyness is, it's a, It's a word that is very loaded, actually. What it entails, in one sense, cannot be even described in words, which you have very nicely attempted to do so, but how to cultivate shyness, or what actually shyness means, it's very complicated. What it means, shyness, what it's modesty, what it means for women to be powerful, because women are more powerful than men, which is very true. Women are more powerful than men. But how, what it means that women are more powerful than men, what kind of power they have. Anyway, that's one, another thought. Another thought I'd like to express is this idea about women in India, the culture in India. Actually, the culture in India, women are of great respect. It's not, we see that in Mahabharata, how the sons, the Pandavas, used to revere their mother. Mother is actually a very respectful word. Unfortunately, the understanding in the West of what a mother is totally different. But mother or woman, it's very respectful. Women, I mean, actually in India, I mean, politically speaking, we have Indira Gandhi, who was a leader, who people respected. We have a lot of women gurus in India, where people, because mother is a very respected term in India. So you go to India, you see so many women gurus. I'm talking out of ISKCON. And I always thought in my mind this whole idea, you know, about women, the problem is in India, the Indian culture that's making not allowing women to be Diksha Gurus. I always had in my mind that that's not true. And I thought it's not in India. I thought it's more the Western influence in India that's bringing that. And it's interesting, it's just Mother Narayani was here yesterday, and she, day before yesterday, she was at our house for prasadam, and she actually, I didn't even bring that point, but she herself said, she said to us, she says, this whole women guru thing is nothing, it's not from India. I mean, she lived in India for most of her life as a devotee. And she says, no, it's not coming from India. This is actually, she said, our Western men who have brought that kind of influence, and certain people in India are being influenced by that. Well, again, talking about India, India is you have the illiterate person and the more educated people, and there is a big difference between that. And so, depending on what kind of background you're coming from, you'll be influenced by such things. But those who are educated, and I'm not talking about, those who are educated, they would have no problem in because that's their culture, is to respect women and to respect mothers. Anyway, I said a lot, but I guess your class was so nice, and you made very nice, good points. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mother Madhavati. One more in the back.
Sitting in the car and listening to your class, I told my husband, he said, I have to go in and see who that is. That's a wonderful class. I haven't heard this for 30 years, but I just wanted to say the one thing you were talking, like, yes, of course, when we become devotees, we become men, women, we become submissive. We want to be submissive to the instructions of the spiritual master. We want to be submissive to the temple president. We want to follow our rules and regulations. But I think it's always important to remember that doesn't mean being submissive doesn't mean you lose all intelligence and that you just follow blindly. And like there were so many mistakes made with men and women because of that, you know. So sometimes you have to be, you know, ever vigilant. Like, what are you being told? And if you could get confused, there's places you can go now. There's people you can see. There's advanced devotees to go talk to and say, gee, I'm just a little confused about this instruction. You know, should I just do this? Or, you know, things like that. So I'm always vigilant now. So maybe it's just my thing, but I think especially with the second and third generation, like it's really nice that they have other people to go to. They just don't have to follow blindly when someone tells you, oh, you're not being submissive if you don't X, Y, Z. No, we still have our intelligence and we can still question and then find out. Oh, yeah, you should do that. Oh, no, that's a little bit wrong. So maybe you should go to your guru and ask, or the temple president, or somebody you trust, you know, a more advanced person. And I think that's really important because of so many mistakes that were made in the past, and that's a common cliche to say, oh, you're not being submissive, just follow blindly. And Prabhupada even said, don't follow blindly. So that was my... I just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Mother Agamika?
Yes, you did bring up many points that are very significant and sensitive. Thank you. In regards to the power of women, we've heard the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. The mother is the first guru. One time, Mother Manchini told me that they say in India that, I don't know, she heard it from some Indian ladies, that when you pack a suitcase, the first things you put in will be the last ones that come out. So when you're raising a child, more often, the mother has the greatest influence or impressions upon the child in the early years. So those things are going to go in first, you know. And when they become a grown-up is when you'll start seeing some of those values that the mother imbibed. Also, the late Mahavishnu Swami has said, that every grown man is indebted to his mother. And regarding shyness, in my readings of Prabhupada's books and his lectures, I came up with this formula of what chastity is. That chastity equals tolerance and shyness. He cited his sister Pishima, Bhavatrini, as an example of that tolerance. She tolerated her husband, who was a debauch. And in the end, however, he came basically to Krishna consciousness through her, because she would never deride him in public. She would never say, if someone came and asked, where's your husband? Oh, he just went out, even though he may have been away for several days. So the shyness is not only Prabhupada would describe shyness as not unrestricted mingling with the opposite sex. So there is a validity, a value to the separation in the temple room, a place of worship, and also not freely, unnecessarily outside of...
Like frivolously.
Yeah, frivolously, just conversing with, and for the sake of just winning friends or what, you know, with the one becomes friend with the husband's friends, you know, or if, so one respects the husband's friends in that way, but the talking and the dress is also a way to express shyness, if you would say express shyness, but in modesty, that's another way to check this unrestricted mingling or interaction between the opposite sexes. Oh, there's so much more. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's all for now.
One last question on this side.
Yeah, I don't know anything about this devotional stuff, but as far as Cleopatra as a historical personality, she wasn't particularly well known for being chaste and shy. She was actually more well known for being a powerful politician and a kshatriya, a ruler of, you know. So I could perhaps, you know, just as a general discussion, I could see her as a savvy, worldly person engaging feminine shyety towards some ends of her perceived well-being of the state or political ambition, but I'm not sure she was, you know, necessarily the same caliber of Queen Kunti or something like that.
No, that's a good point. Thank you, Prabhu. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaura Premanandi.